The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Everybody likes to find a Jesus Christ with whom he can be comfortable, either a petulant Christ, a long-haired effeminate Christ, or maybe one who is the friend of all poor people, or maybe somebody who is kind of grooving down the avenue with a chenille bedspread and open-toed sandals with long hair and a sorrowful face who supposedly hates the establishment. Jesus Christ superstar. Everybody, every generation that comes along seems to recreate a new image of who and what this Jesus Christ was. The only thing they haven't changed is the idea of him as a baby. But every other idea about Jesus Christ has been altered with every successive generation. So today, the kids have him as the kind of a first hippie or a vagabond with whom they can identify. And now, you know, it took the hippie movement to get it to swing around to that. You know why? Because back in the 40s, when everybody wore a military haircut and the pictures in the Bible showed a long-haired Christ, no wonder it was so tough for those Sunday school teachers to try to get kids to pay attention to Jesus. They could tell them a story about Daniel. Now, Daniel out there was in a lion's den. He was standing off lions. Now, they could admire a man like that. Samson, well, look what he did. He caused those walls to collapse and kill all those people. And what about David? David choosing the stones out of the brook and a sling, you know, and hit old Goliath right in the middle of the forehead, walks up and chops his head off with a two-handed sword. Now, that's a fellow that kids in Sunday school could identify with in those days. He was a champion. He was a hero. Samson had muscles, you know, and Jesus didn't. I mean, let's face it, that was the picture that they showed them of who and what Jesus Christ was supposed to look like. How could they get kids who could read of a Noah who sailed in the ark, a Daniel in the lion's den, or someone such as a David who fought with bears and lions to identify with a petulant figure who had withdrawn from society, who went along in great formal ceremony with his hands always kind of like a steeple. I guess his fingers were cold. Who had long, effeminate brown locks cascading down onto his shoulders. Who had kind of weak, limpid, watery eyes. And they're teaching little kids about this. It reminds me of the little kid who finally became disgusted when he caught his dad creeping into Philly's sock that he left on the mantle at Christmas time, and he found out there wasn't a Santa Claus. And he said, well, now I'm going to look into this Jesus Christ business too. They've been lying to me about Santa all these years. I think a lot of kids identify with a Santa Claus a lot more than they do with the Jesus Christ, because at least Santa Claus is supposed to give them things. They're not quite sure whether Jesus is going to give them anything or not. Well, people have all kinds of weird ideas about who and what Jesus Christ was. It seems they know practically nothing about him. As a matter of fact, I want to read to you an interesting statement. Back in the mid-60s, a popular national picture magazine published a special issue on the Bible. And an editor of another magazine summed up the article as follows, quote, written from the point of view of 19th century German rationalism, the majority of the articles left very little room for God to have given the Bible through divine revelation. God, like the Bible itself, is shown to be a product of evolution, growing with his people. Jesus is shown as an unknown carpenter's son who made good. In its treatment of the life of Jesus, modern biblical scholars are still searching for an historical Jesus, feeling, of course, the gospel accounts are merely adorned accounts of adoring followers and cannot be taken at face value. So as the magazine's article said, the quest had come to that ultimate blank wall, the absolute futility. Theologian Rudolf Bultmann summed up the article's 15,000-word quest with the following words. I think it's so beautiful. It's so funny, too. I do indeed think that we now can know almost nothing concerning the life and personality of Jesus. That reminds me of a judge sitting in a courtroom trial. Maybe he's got all kinds of eyewitnesses, 500 eyewitnesses out here, thousands of other people who attended this fellow. He's on trial for his life now. They've got thousands of eyewitnesses, dozens of people who lived with this man year after year after year, ate and slept and walked and talked with him, shared every intimate moment you can imagine with him. And so one after another, these people come parading in, and the judge says, no, we can't admit this as evidence. No, that guy, he's not a credible witness. No, we can't believe this one. And systematically throws them out by the thousands, turns around and says to the gallery, I do think we now can know practically nothing about the man against whom we seek this evidence. Now, why do people decide arbitrarily that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John can't be trusted? They haven't proved it. You've never seen any proof. Neither have they. But they just decide, well, we can't look at that. That wouldn't be fair. I mean, you don't want to read statements from people who were for him. This is the way we approach it in the press, it seems. If you want to find out about a person, ask his enemies. You know, if you want to find out all about Judaism, you're thinking maybe you'll become a member of Sammy Davis Jr.'s religion. And there are some real funny ones that Sammy Davis gets off about himself and about that. But maybe you're looking into Judaism. So you decide, I'm going to find out whether I ought to become a Jew. So where do you go? Well, you go talk to a Catholic priest. Sure you do. You go talk to a good Mormon that you know. You go talk to a Seventh-day Adventist, or you go look up a Presbyterian. Isn't that exactly what you would do? Now, if you were going to study for the Catholic religion, you and your wife decided, I want to bring up my kids in a Catholic school. Maybe you've got some idea about their schools or something. Where are you going to go to get the very best advice? Well, of course, you're going to go to a Jewish rabbi to find out all you can about the Knights of Columbus. This is exactly the way people seem to reason. They want to know about that guy so-and-so. So who do they ask? A barroom buddy? Somebody that comes down to watch haircuts on Sunday? Or somebody who's sitting on the courthouse steps and philosophizing about the problems of the world under the catalpa tree in the summer? And they say, what do you think about so-and-so? When I hear people rationalizing about political figures, well, I don't trust him. Why don't you? I don't know. You know, that's exactly right. I don't trust him. Why? I don't know. I just don't like him. That's the way people are. Why are we that way? Well, because we've got our human nature, which is a collection of vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed, and suspicion. I guess because deep down inside we probably know pretty much what kind of a character we are, and we suspicion a lot of other people must be just about the same way, and that makes us mad at them clear through. Maybe that has something to do with it, I don't know. But everybody seems to want to create Christ in their own image. They want a Christ they can be comfortable with. I remember very well a leading theologian who was partially responsible for getting me very interested in the Bible, because he made a statement years before that was quoted in a national magazine, at which time he said, let us understand what Christianity is not. Christianity is not a way of life. And I was reading in the book of Acts at that precise time, and I made the very first mark I'd ever made in the Bible. And I think it's still here, because this is a very ancient Bible. Yeah, it is. It's hard to see, though, because it's so worn. This is Acts, the 18th chapter. Here's a two-page spread of the Bible right here. It says right here, this man was instructed in the way of the Lord. And right here it talks about that way. Here it says that way. Several times here in a two-page spread in the Bible, it talks about the way of the Lord. Well, this man said, Christianity is not a way of life. And here was this man, Apollos, who'd been out preaching, and Priscilla and Aquila, funny names maybe. Well, we got funny names today, too, like Ebenezer Stavzinski. That doesn't sound too bad. It just sounds biblical. Priscilla and Aquila had been expounding unto him the way of God more perfectly. Now, this man was a respected man in the Christian world. He said, let us understand what Christianity is not. It is not a way of life. Here are men who died for their beliefs, who were expounding to each other a way of life. I thought, well, now, who am I going to believe? I made up my mind I'd believe the eyewitnesses, not the fellow that had the hip-pocket relationship with Christ. Well, at any rate, he told to a large audience in a large western city some years later, he said, you know, I was on a New York City street, one of those terrible rush hour, 5 o'clock times when some of those summer downpours would come along. I was standing out there. I was late for an appointment. It began to rain. The taxis were going by and all their lights were on. They were occupied. People were scurrying here and there, and you thought, I'm going to be late. Oh, Lord, he said, get me a taxi. And right away, a taxi materialized out of nowhere, pulled up and flung its door open. A passenger got out and he jumped in. Now, that's service. I'm just not quite sure whether or not the Lord, that is the Jesus Christ of my Bible, who is described in the Bible, was the one who was just standing around with bated breath waiting for this fellow to get him a taxi. I just don't know whether Jesus has taken up the job of doorman for casual passers-by and itinerant preachers who are late for appointments. That isn't the Jesus Christ of the Bible. Believe it or not, Jesus Christ of your Bible was a newscaster who foretold our events in which we are living, the events that affect us every single day right here and now. I'll show you how Jesus Christ talked of our day in just a few moments.
Did you know that Benjamin Franklin was the father of the public school system in the United States? His proposals resulted in the creation of the University of Pennsylvania. Or did you know that Davy Crockett, hero of the Alamo, was well educated? He wrote a lengthy poem in the Nashville Banner, decrying his political defeat. Or that Sequoia, a self-educated Cherokee leader, created the first American Indian alphabet. But for a time, his people thought that the so-called talking leaves were a product of insanity instead of intelligence. And did you know that Jesus Christ of Nazareth was a well-educated, tax-paying, property owner and prosperous businessman? Many other revealing facts about the education of this great personage are explained in the booklet entitled, The Real Jesus. Request your own copy of this free publication and find out about The Real Jesus. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Would the youth of the nation still adore, worship, love, quote sayings from, and follow the teachings of, if they do, Jesus Christ, who had short hair, who had rough carpenter's hands, who had such a masculine build when he threw some money changers and their animals out of the temple, nobody dared challenge him, who was so commonplace that he had to be picked out of a crowd by a kiss that was paid for by a prodigious sum of money, who came of the tribe of Judah, and therefore was a Jew, though he belongs to all races and all of humankind. The Bible is quite clear on that statement, Hitlerian belief to the contrary. If he looked just the way he did look, if he did just what the Bible says he did, if he came for the precise purpose the Bible reveals, if he prophesied as the Bible shows he did, and if he looks exactly as the Bible describes him today, I tell you, I am strongly convinced that if the real Jesus Christ of Nazareth came back to this earth just the way he once did, there is very grave danger he would be crucified all over again. You might not believe that, but that's because you may not have read what Jesus said in the Bible about his teachings. They just don't square with the teachings of this society. He wouldn't belong in it. Now, he wouldn't be mad at anybody. Jesus wouldn't come to chew out a lot of people and tell them how evil they are, necessarily, but neither would he pull any punches. Everything would be either right or wrong, you know, black or white and all the in-betweens, and that has nothing to do with race. I'm talking now about truth as opposed to error in the spiritual connotation of that figure of speech of black and white. People have created a Jesus of their own choosing. But Jesus Christ of Nazareth did not come to establish an ivory-towered religion in which people can gather themselves in their own kind of a private Christian withdrawal system of their own religious pseudo-sanctimonious hang-ups into an interior inner sanctum of self-righteousness, tuck the Bible under their arm as a weapon against all the rest of the segments of society and other religions, and live their lives in a kind of a cloistered little rut in which their time-honored traditions are their God instead of the real God in the Bible, in which some of their historical hang-ups, and history is largely interpretive if people would really believe that, have become cliches they parrot endlessly over and over again without being willing to look into the Bible to see what it really says. To this man will I look, says the Bible, to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit and trembles at my word. People don't tremble at the Bible. We can sing the song all day long if we'd like about put your hand in the hand, and when I read in the holy book, I want to tremble. Well, maybe some people do, but do they do it for fear of misinterpreting it? Do they do it for fear of misbelieving it? Of missing something important? Let's take a little experiment and find out. Jesus said in the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, he was going to return to this earth. 44% of the graduate theologians who are to become tomorrow's ministers do not believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Now, how on earth you can become a minister of the gospel when the heart and the core and the focal point of the gospel is the fact of Jesus' purpose and mission in life, of his resurrection, of his job from that time to this, and of his eventual return to this earth to straighten out the problems on this earth here below, because this is where the problems are. How on earth someone could claim to be equipped to go out and preach about Christ when he doesn't know the circumstances of his birth, when he was born, what he looked like, when his ministry began, what his ministry consisted of, whether he told the truth, doesn't know whether his miracles were real, doesn't know the circumstances of his death, how he died, whether he died, how long he was in the tomb, and whether he was raised, and doesn't know whether or not he's going to come again, and strongly suspicions the New Testament ought to be blue penciled and several portions of it done away with entirely, and the rest of it viewed with a certain measure of skepticism. How on earth can you be equipped to go out and convince anybody else of anything? If you were that convinced about the founding documents of your own nation, and you were trying to convince a foreigner, a visitor, of what a wonderful country you got there, what kind of a salesman would you be? What kind of a representative of your own way of life and your own freedoms and privileges and blessings? If you don't even believe in the heartfelt convictions of the founding fathers who envisioned it from the earliest conception of a free people. Well, maybe that's why they're not doing too good a job, you suppose? Maybe that's why it's so tough to get people publicly to go through the embarrassing confession they believe in somebody who had such a giant inferiority complex, who's been up there in heaven all these years, petulant, saying, "Oh, why don't you believe in me?" Is that what Jesus Christ is doing? Is his entire life dedicated to getting people just to believe in him? Or is his life dedicated, his existence here and now, to changing the entire course of humankind? Is he trying to change a few people so they can withdraw from all of the horrible problems of our age, and they can kind of gather themselves up into their full Pharisaical dignity and say, "I've got mine, and I hope the rest of you guys try"? Did Jesus bring a religion for a group of exclusivists who can name themselves in all kinds of funny names and withdraw into their own inner sanctum of religious ceremony and tell the rest of the world, "We hope you guys hang"? Is that what he came to accomplish? No, Jesus Christ of Nazareth was a prophet. There's a great deal you can know about him. He gave predictions about the age in which we live. And here in Matthew 24, he said, "Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in different places. All these are the beginning of tribulation or of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you." Now, does that square with the teachings today? Does it square with the teachings that say to you that if you become a Christian, the chances are you're just about as acceptable in society as any place else? You can go to the supermarket if you're a Christian, nobody can tell you from a pagan. Two people can be shopping and picking off the same bread with the same preservatives in it and put it in the same kind of shopping carts and going out whistling away with their food stamps in their hands. And if you don't know what's going on inside their heads, you haven't the faintest conception whether one believes in idolatry and the other one believes in Jesus Christ. They might dress the same, they might smoke the same brand of cigarettes. How are you going to identify who is a Christian unless they are living according to the life Jesus Christ of Nazareth himself set down as a pattern, not to live in our stead so we don't have to, but to live for us as an example? Jesus Christ of Nazareth was a prophet. Here's one major prophecy he gave in Matthew 24 and verse 14. "And this gospel," that's good news, "of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness." It doesn't say to get the world converted. I wanted to show you last time, and I'm going to in a moment, how Jesus Christ of Nazareth showed it was to be preached. It's good news. Gospel means good news. It's not bad news. It's not God about to throw his lightning bolts from heaven to inflict all kinds of suffering on hapless humanity that is so innocent we've done virtually nothing. God sitting up there in his comfortable heavenly armchair, surrounded by clouds, waiting to torment and to punish us poor, helpless human beings. In the meantime, there's a kind of a petulant Christ who is on the scent, like a faithful bloodhound who's going to track us down to the last nth degree of our life. And even if we're lying there gasping, "Doc, can't you save me?" the minister's going to show up and say, "Now, are you ready?" That isn't the way the Bible tells the story. I'd like to prove to you that Jesus said there was a specific reason why he spoke in parables so people wouldn't get the point.
Good News is a magazine with answers for today's world from the Bible. Answers for those with a need to know. Because of conflicting religious doctrine today, Good News helps point out what the Bible says for those who want to understand. Many times our misunderstanding comes from confusion that this world causes, misinterpretation, or direct twisting of Scripture to conform to the world's own doctrines. Good News not only examines the words of the Bible, but allows the Bible to interpret itself, comparing clear passages with obscure ones. This helps the reader grasp an overview on each subject and obtain vital keys for today's living. It will assist your focus on the Bible in the privacy of your own home. Request a prepaid subscription. This free monthly magazine is Good News. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
The disciples came and asked Jesus, "Look, why are you always talking to these people in parables?" Now, if you were to go to the Sunday school teacher and you asked that same question, you'd probably be told the following. Well, Jesus talked in parables because it was a farming folk, an agrarian society to which he came. He had to make the stories interesting so people would get the point. So he talked about the sower in the field. He talked about the person who had lost something of great value. He talked about the shepherd with his 90 and 9. He talked about all of these various interesting, quaint little stories to graphically illustrate, to better get across the point. He talked in similes and analogies so that people would really understand. That isn't what Jesus said. The disciples came and asked him, "You ought to check up on this. You know, last time I said, when I come on, you ought to be sure and have your own Bible there handy. If you have one, maybe you've forgotten where it was. Maybe the bride, the woman there in the house, the lady of the house probably carried it down the aisle. Maybe it was a white covered one with a rose taped on it or something. I might help you look. You could probably look in an old chest. I'll bet it's in the attic or the basement. It might be under a rose vase somewhere in a bedroom. It might be on a piano behind one of the kids' pictures. You may have put it away without realizing it somewhere in the family library if you have one, a bunch of books there somewhere. But if you look around, you're liable to find a Bible." I'm saying that humorously because a lot of people know right where they are. And a lot of people do bother to read them. Not in public if they can help it, but once in a while they sneak in a few minutes to read the Bible. And again, those of you who are reading the Bible a great deal, of course, obviously, I don't mean you. But why don't you get the Bible and check up and see if you can find out whether I'm making a mistake. Here in the 13th chapter of the book of Matthew in verse 10, the disciples came and said unto him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He had just gotten through giving them one here about the sower, and the seed falling in thorny and stony places and so on. So he answered and said unto them, "Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever has, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance." Now, how's that square with some of the ideas and the attitudes of the early retirement welfare people, not all of whom could get a job, but some of whom could and should? Was Jesus a modern day, at that time, Robin Hood? Was he just for poor folks only? Well, you know, Jesus slept in rich men's homes. He frequented the houses of people high in society. He slept in the home of Simon, a Pharisee, who was a man of vast wealth. He attended great wedding festivals. He went to so many big dinners, attended so many festivals and the like, that people even began to spread the rumor that he was a glutton and a wine bibber. Of course, the way some people tell it, he was a grape juice bibber. I don't know what on earth a grape juice bibber is. But a lot of people don't believe that Jesus really drank wine. They talk about fermented wine. Look, wine is fermented. It isn't wine if it's not fermented. But anyhow, that's a separate subject. But he said here, "Whosoever has not, from him shall be taken away even that which he has. Therefore I speak to them in parables, that because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing you shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing." What's our attention span? 30 seconds? I mean, we're so conditioned to having our attention here and there and the other place, and by interesting little gadgets and gimmicks. You take television commercials, and as one guy said, you can have them, but they're so exciting, so interesting sometimes, so funny other times. But, you know, if we didn't have an attention span of about 30 seconds, it wouldn't be necessary to have all the gimmicks that people try to use to get people to ponder something of any importance for a period of time. Nothing is certainly more true or truer of our society today than grossness of heart and dullness of hearing. Their ears, they have closed less than any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and be converted, and I should heal them. So Jesus said, I speak in parables lest they should turn, lest they should understand. No, he was speaking in parables so they wouldn't get it. And he said in verse 16, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. He said, many are called and few are chosen. Many, many are being called. Whether they listen to it, whether they'll take up the challenge, whether they'll do something about it, is up to them. But he went on to say, verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see and have not seen them, and to hear those things which you hear and have not heard them. And then he went on to tell the meaning of the parable of the sower. So Jesus spoke in parables so people wouldn't understand the meaning of what he said. Jesus said it's possible to worship him in vain. He said all nations are deceived. He said so many things that people don't know he said. It's time we began to blow the dust off our Bibles and get them out and find out what they really say. Jesus Christ of Nazareth was a newscaster who foretold our day, and Matthew 24 is the focal point of all prophecy, and prophecy is the sixth of the seven major proofs that God does exist. Well, there are seven proofs God exists. Now, this booklet that we'll send you by return mail, free of charge, shows you these are not guesses, but factual proofs. It's not a weighty booklet. It's a very short, very brief booklet that I imagine you can read in less than 20 minutes. It's just that simple. You write for this booklet if you want some real solid proofs for further research and discussion on your own part. All seven of them, one after another, very tangible, easy to read, simple to understand. And it's free of charge. There is no price whatsoever. This goes into more of the intelligence versus non-intelligent idea of where did life come from, of how there is a supreme intelligence, that unintelligence and absolute ignorance does not produce intelligence, that randomness and haphazard chaos does not produce order. Man's intelligence is compared versus God's. You look all around you at the miracles, it seems, that man has wrought. The space age, technology, science, the fabulous day in which we live of jet travel and of space travel even. And then yet on the other hand, you take a look at the common cold and the flus, all the diseases and aches and pains that plague us. You need to write for the booklet, Does God Exist? All you need to do to receive this booklet is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that, if you would please, the call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of the Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in the Plain Truth plainly even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. And that's what you will read in the Plain Truth. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Jed Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Jed Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.